This is Digital Story Podcast number 915, October 3rd, 2023. Today's theme is how to go carry-on only for a 10-day photo trip. I'm Derek Story. I'm on my way to Sedona, Arizona for our upcoming photography workshop. We'll be working in a variety of beautiful settings, and I plan on coming home with plenty of pictures. And since a lot of my gear has to be packed in my suitcase, I'm going super nimble and will be carrying on both of my bags. How could such a thing happen for a 10-day photo trip? Find out on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So over the years, I've had pretty bad luck with checking my bags. And the thing about it is you never know when disaster is going to strike. And it could be as terrible as them losing your bag altogether, or it could be as frustrating as standing there in baggage claim long after your flight has landed and waiting for your bags to come out, and waiting and waiting and waiting. I've also had people go into my bag and remove items without my permission. I'm just thinking, when I'm working a photo workshop and when I'm leading a photo workshop, I really can't afford to have too many things go wrong, at least in the preparation phase. As I'm getting my gear there, as I'm getting set up, you know, all that kind of stuff, I want that to go smoothly. I don't want half of my gear to be stuck somewhere else. I don't want someone to take some of my gear out of my bag and me not have it when I get there. And I really don't want to be standing around a whole lot waiting for my bags to appear in baggage claim. I want to get my bags and get to work. So I was thinking about this trip. I have to fly to Arizona from California for this workshop. And I was thinking, you know what? I'm going to carry on. I've done it for personal trips many times, but I rarely carry on for work trips because I have too much gear. But you know what? I'm going to do it for this trip. I want to have everything with me. That way I can put whatever I want in my suitcase. I can put whatever I want in my shoulder bag, you know, that goes with me where my laptop and all that stuff is. And I don't have to think about it. It's just all right there. The challenge is, and the first question that was asked of me as I was floating this idea is, well, isn't it a 10-day trip? How are you going to, you know, change clothes and things like that? And I go, you know what? I can do this. I've done this before. I can have enough clothing for the trip. I'm not going to the outback, right? I'm going to be in cities. I'm going to be in Cottonwood, Arizona. I'm going to be in Sedona, Arizona. I'm going to be in Jerome. I'm going to be in Prescott. I'm going to be in all those places that have things. They have stores. They have things just in case I forget something or I decide I need an extra shirt or whatever it happens to be. So I decided to take this challenge up to see if I could go completely carry on for this trip. Now I have finished packing and I can tell you that yes, I can and yes, I am. And this is how I did it already. So let's start with the suitcase itself. I am using the fantastic, the wonderful, I absolutely adore this suitcase. I've talked about it before, but it's been a while. The Solgaard, and the way they spell it is S-O-L-G-A-A-R-D, Solgaard carry-on suitcase. Now, they have two sizes, and they have the carry-on size, and they have a little bigger size. The one that I have works on domestic flights. It's a little bit bigger. It works on domestic flights, and they don't guarantee that it'll work on international flights where sometimes the overhead spaces are smaller. But on domestic flights in the U.S. here, I have had nothing but good luck with this bag. In fact, this bag, you know, there's two ways you can slide a bag into the overhead. You can slide it sideways, right, which I don't like because there's wasted room. Or you can slide it wheels first in, and so that it takes up far less room. This bag, the Solgard carry-on, goes wheels first into carry-on compartments over my head, and the door closes easily. There's no problem at all. It is a great size. It's a four-wheeler, so it's very easy to roll around. Has a nice extended handle. It has a battery port so that I can charge my iPhone or my watch, or something starts to run out of juice on the road. It has a port right there in the bag, on the outside of the bag, that I can plug into. And it's a hard shell suitcase, right? It's not a soft bag. It's a hard shell with two very serious click locks, and they're latches actually. And so what you can do is you can pack this thing really full and then you can just push it down, squish it, and then those latches just hold it perfectly. It has a built-in TSA approved combo lock. So it has a key, a TSA key, but it has a combo lock built right in. And it's just fantastic. So what I do with this bag is that I pack it full. And one of the keys for me doing that is I like to use eBag packing cubes. Long time ago, I talked about eBag packing cubes. And to this day, I have people tell me that was one of the best equipment tips I ever shared with them. They learned about the packing cubes on the podcast, and they started using the packing cubes. They fell in love with the packing cubes, and they will never travel without the packing cubes. And what are they? They're just these wonderful zippered pouches in different sizes. They look good. They have the right height to fit in half a suitcase, right? Because your suitcase opens up. It's like a clamshell, opens up. So they're the right height for half of the suitcase. And you can put your clothes in there. Let's say for my underwear, my socks, I can just cram them in this packing cube, press down on the packing cube to compress it, then zip it, and it stays compressed. And it takes up far less space than if I just had stuff loose in there. So you have a packing cube for your underwear and your socks. You have a packing cube for your t-shirts. You know, you have a packing cube for all these different things. I even have a packing cube for my extra set of shoes, which fit in my bag. By the way, in the show notes, if you go to show notes, I have the open Solgard carry-on suitcase opened up. You can see some of the packing cubes in there. You can see everything that's in there, and you can see how this all just fits together. In my case with this suitcase, I have a Lowepro camera bag in there. I have a packing cube above it that has my shoes, and then I have the MiPhoto backpacker tripod above that in its case. All of that fits on one side. In fact, there's even enough room for a little extra case on the side of my Lowepro bag. And that Lowepro bag is no slouch. It's what I've been carrying lately. It carries my OM-1 in there, and I can have one lens on the OM-1, and I can have two lenses in the side of the OM-1, and I can have my cards and all the stuff that I need, little flash, all that stuff, all fits in that bag. And it has tactical loops on the outside, and I have accessories that can go in those loops. So I could put a water bottle holder, I could put an extra lens pouch, you know, I could even put a little tripod on the bottom, whatever I want to do. So this is a really cool bag. So all of that fits on one side: tripod, shoes, toiletries, a cable bag, and photo bag, all on one side of the Solgard. And then on the other side, it's three packing cubes. A larger packing cube that has t-shirts, shirts, and pants in there. And then two smaller packing cubes that have, one has underwear and stuff, and the other one just has accessories, clothing accessories, like an extra hat, a beanie in case it gets cold, you know, all that kind of stuff. A waterproof windbreaker, you know, that's very compact. All that stuff fits on the other side. All of this fits in the carry-on bag, right? So I already have a camera, lenses, tripod, extra set of shoes, cables, clothing, power strips, all that stuff in this bag that fits in the overhead compartment. It's so bad. It's so bad. So let me see. Let me make sure I've got everything here. I am bringing all-in-one mirrorless camera. I have a bunch of lenses, including a lens for night photography, because I scheduled this so that there isn't a moon, and so we can go out and do night photography. And one of the participants wrote me, or wrote the whole group actually, during our pre-workshop discussion, and said that Cottonwood, which is where we're staying, was the 8th best spot in the U.S. for nighttime photography. 8th best spot in the whole U.S., Cottonwood, right where we're staying. So, yes, we're doing a little night photography. I've got my filter, my nighttime filter. I'm ready to go. I've got my little tripod, and I'm going to shoot with a little more narrow lens this time. Usually I go for a wider lens, but I am going to take the Olympus 17mm f1.2. I love this lens. I use it for my pro work a lot, for portrait work, but I'm taking it because it's so fast. It's just a beautiful lens. It has a manual focusing ring that I can use, which is very important. Or I can use the Starry Night setting on the OM-1. Can go either way. It doesn't weigh down the tripod too much, so I can get by with the smaller tripod. By the way, along with that little tripod, I carry an inflatable seat, is what it is. It's for backpacking. It's super flat. I mean, when it all folds up, it's about the size of my hand. I carry that so that I can have the tripod lower to the ground so there isn't as much movement or potential movement of the camera. And then I can sit on this, I inflate this little pad, and I can sit on it. And it's actually quite nice. It's really, really lovely. And of course, I have the swing out LCD and all that good stuff. So nice little kit. So with the night filter and the tripod and this very nice 17mm lens, I think I'm going to get some really terrific shots. And then I have all sorts of other stuff that I'm bringing along that I have to. I'm bringing along the Fujifilm X100V. I want a second camera. And then my third camera is going to be the iPhone 15 Pro Max. And later on in this podcast, I did some testing with their highest quality RAW files on the Pro Max. And I'll talk a little bit about what I think of those RAW files later in the show here. Basically three cameras and plenty of lenses between the Fujifilm, the iPhone 15 Pro Max, and then my OM-1. I have cables, power bricks, an audio recorder. I'll be doing a podcast on the road. The next podcast will be from on the road. The filters and various accessories. Now for clothing, which some people may be wondering, how are you doing the clothing? Well, the weather is going to be really nice. And so that helps me a lot. So I'm bringing two pairs of Clothing Arts Pickpocket Proof Adventure Travel Shorts. And I have the link to this and a whole bunch of other stuff in the show notes. If you've never worn Clothing Arts Pickpocket Proof Adventure Travel Shorts, they are great. First thing I love about them, on both of the pockets, you know, the top pockets where you put your hands in, they're zippered. Part of the zippering is to help prevent pickpocketing, right? The reason why I like the zippering is because things don't fall out of my pants, right? So I can have the iPhone in one, I can have my wallet in the other. I zip it down, right? Nice big zipper, and they don't fall out no matter what I'm doing. All the other pockets are cargo shorts, so they've got another set of pockets on the pant legs. They have enclosures, double enclosures, a snap and buttons both. The back pockets are zippered and have a flap. I mean, these pockets are so cool. You are never going to lose anything with these pants, right? And I know they're designed to prevent pickpocketing, but I like them because I never lose anything. I've been wearing them now for a couple years, and I like them. So I'm taking two pairs, two different colors. They're a really nice material. They look good. They hold up very well when you're hiking and trekking and doing all that good stuff. Two pairs of those, and then one pair of Eddie Bauer long travel pants. And the reason why I pack the Eddie Bauer pants is because they're made for travel and they fold up very flat. They're very small. I don't pack Levi's, even though I like to wear Levi's. I don't pack them in the bag. I actually wear the Levi's on the plane. So I'll wear the Levi's there and I'll wear the Levi's back. But I don't pack them in the suitcase because they take up too much space. So I can get two pairs of shorts, my long pants, and then I get t-shirts, underwear, long sleeve shirt. I'll have a down jacket and I'll wear that on the plane. I'll have that on the plane. Sometimes it gets a little chilly with the AC and all that, or it's just nice to put behind my head if I want to take a nap, all that good stuff. So I'll bring that as well. As I mentioned, I have a foldable rain shell that goes in the suitcase. And that's nice because I can just clip that onto my camera bag. If the weather changes on me, I have another layer, has a hood on it, and it also is water resistant. So that's pretty cool. Now, a key ingredient that's in here with all this other stuff is laundry detergent. I got little porta packs. I got two of them. I bring laundry detergent, spot remover, and then I also have a portable first aid kit, flashlight, iPhone stand, so I can do the little nightstand thing with the new iOS. Hat, sunglasses, sunblock, all that stuff is in there as well. But the laundry detergent is key. Sometimes you'll have washing machines there when you're on location. Sometimes you don't. But either way, it's easy enough just to wash a couple shirts, some underwear, some socks in the sink with the detergent. Just use a little bit of laundry detergent and wring them out, rinse them, all that good stuff. Hang them up in the shower and you're good to go the next day or the day after that, depending on how humid it is and how long it takes them to dry. But by having laundry detergent, then I can do a refresh on my clothing while I'm there. And if I don't even have time to go out, go to laundromat or look for washing machine, I can do it right there in my hotel room at night before I go to bed. Now in my shoulder bag that complements the carry-on, that's where I have the MacBook Pro 14.2-inch laptop, an iPad mini, my AirPods, a couple more lenses, more cables, power bricks, and my water bottle. I like to bring a water bottle on the plane. I like to have a water bottle with me at all times when I'm on location. And we don't use single-use stuff on our workshop, so everyone has to bring a water bottle because I don't provide single-use water bottles on the trip. It's environmentally unfriendly, single-use water bottle, so I don't have that stuff at all. That is how I do it. And the whole thing just compresses so nicely when I close the suitcase. All that clothing that's in packing cubes just gets click those latches and I'm ready to go. Now the bag itself, the suitcase is dense, right? Because I really have it packed tightly. So there is a little bit of weight to it, not over the 50 pounds that they don't allow. It's less than that, but there's a little bit of weight to it. And, you know, so you get a little shoulder exercise when you put it up in the overhead compartment. That's how I'm going. I also have, by the way, where the handles come up on these suitcases. There's always on the inside of the suitcase, kind of a trench down the middle of the suitcase, right? Because the handle assembly has to go there. So I found a nice little Manfrotto monopod that fits beautifully down that trench in the middle so it doesn't take up any extra room. And so now I also have a monopod and or a selfie stick or a hiking stick if I need it. Really light, it's plenty long, has a nice rubber grip on it. It works really well and it fits right in between those two rails for the pop-up handle on the inside of the suitcase. That, my friend, is how I'm going to Sedona, Arizona, 10-day trip. I'll let you know when I get back if I ran into clothing challenges or not. I'm feeling pretty confident. I've been traveling for a long time, but we will see, and I will give you the honest answer. Four productive mindsets when traveling for photography. And you can read this entire article on fstoppers.com. I thought this story was a nice complement to what I was talking about in the top story, and I like the philosophy of this author. Let me read you the opening paragraphs, two opening paragraphs, and then I'll give you his key points. For a lot of photographers, the act of traveling is a double-edged sword. We travel to be able to see the world and draw as much inspiration as we can from everything we see and experience. At the same time, the act of traveling often requires pushing out of our comfort zones and leaving behind a lot of the things that allow us to operate with fewer worries and limitations. Traveling often involves unpredictability of new surroundings, the randomness of photographic subjects, and the requirements and limitations of our gear. Travel is a huge equalizer that requires a lot of planning and a lot of energy to make sure that the experience is both productive and refreshing at the same time. Here are four things to keep in mind that might help you make the most of your travel experiences no matter where you are going. Those are nice introductory paragraphs, don't you think? I mean, right away, I'm reading this, and I go, I like this philosophy here. This is good stuff. So I'm going to give you the four key points, just the headliners, and then you can go to the article that's on F-Stoppers and read more about the philosophy behind these four key points. But here they are. First of all, don't let unfavorable weather stop you. And that is so true for traveling in general and for photography specifically. We've had workshops where we had days of just challenging weather, you know, rain and wind and all that good stuff. And I made sure that everyone was prepared before they came on the workshop. You can see it in the weather forecast. And you know what? The photos that we come away with in those conditions are often just wonderful, just so dynamic. And you don't get that on a calm day with a blue sky and no clouds, right? Photographically, you never want to let weather stop you. You just want to be prepared, have the right clothing and the right gear. And then for travel in general, just be ready. Just be ready. I have, for my shoulder bag, I have a rain shell for it so that it will protect it. If I have to go in a downpour, you know, my suitcase is a hard shell that has nice gaskets around the single edge of it with no outside pockets. That holds up really well in bad weather, and I'm ready to go. I can get from A to B, no problem at all. And then my shoulder bag when I'm out working has a rain cover as well, my Low Pro bag. I'm just ready for that stuff, all right? And if I'm ready for the weather, then it is not going to hamper my travel, and I'm going to be able to continue to see and take pictures and enjoy. Second one, give yourself some wiggle room. And I think this is so important when you're traveling. Yeah, it's great to have schedules. It's great to say, okay, we're going to be here at this point, and then we're going to be here at this point. But the world doesn't always cooperate. Flights get delayed. Public transportation may or may not show up sometimes, depending on what kind it is and where you are. Friends sometimes forget about you. You know, all that kind of stuff. Things take longer. You're in a restaurant longer than you thought. You're used to fast service and you get slow service and you miss your train. You know, all that stuff happens. Give yourself some wiggle room so you don't stress. If you're going to the airport, get there early. You can always have a cup of coffee or breakfast or lunch if you're way early, and just relax, enjoy the environment. But know that you have that extra time in case you get delayed on the road or you get delayed coming from one form of transportation to another. Wiggle room, I think, is so important on the road. Number three, don't forget to be a tourist. And I learned this a long time ago, and it has changed my travel. I used to want to be cool. And once I gave up trying to be cool, I started having a lot more fun. And what I mean by being cool is like, oh, like I fit in, like I know what's going on. I've never been here before, but hey, I'm cool. I know what's happening. Well, sometimes I don't know what's happening, and it's okay. And what I have found is that when I act like a tourist, and I don't mean be a weenie, I mean act like I'm visiting and enthusiastically visiting, respectfully visiting that kind of tourist, people help me out more. When you're cool, it's hard to ask for directions because, hey, you're cool. You're supposed to know where you're going. If you're a tourist, it's okay to be lost and people will take mercy on you. As long as you're respectful, as long as you're, I think, pleasant and enthusiastic, I have had really good luck on the road. Just being a tourist, just being honest and saying, I don't know what I'm doing here. Can you help me? And then the fourth one sort of ties into the third one, which is connect with people. I think this is really important as well. You know, part of the joy of travel, going to different places, is meeting different people. People who are different than you, your family, your friends, and your community. Because by connecting with the people when you're on the road, you learn more about the world. And sometimes you learn why things happen in the world, where before in your own little world, you couldn't say, why would people do that? Well, then you travel and you get to know them a little bit and you go, oh, that's why they do that. You know, it starts to make a little bit of sense. It's part of the joy of travel is broadening your horizon, is being like Ted Lasso and being curious, not judgmental. So important when you're traveling. I think so important for life in general. Be curious, not judgmental, and connect with people and revel in the differences and appreciate the differences. You'll have a much better time. You can also read the author's take on these 4 points, but I just think it's a nice little article and something good to read before you get on the plane or you hit the car for the road trip or you get on the train. Get you in the right frame of mind. How do iPhone 15 Pro RAW files stack up to our interchangeable lens cameras? I'm going to tell you. So, this past weekend, I took my iPhone 15 Pro Max out into wine country. I'm also scouting for the wine country workshop that's coming up in November. Oh, terrible work, that scouting for the wine country workshop, I tell you. And we had a beautiful day, blue sky. It was started out foggy. And then it burned off, beautiful blue sky with clouds. And I was in wine country. And I said, I am going to take some shots at full pro raw resolution. And so I wanted to see how these files would hold up. What am I talking about? Well, if you go into settings on an iPhone 15 Pro, Pro Max, any of them, right? And you scroll down settings, you got to scroll down a bit and you get the camera. And then you go to formats and you have some options. You get to Pro Raw and resolution control. And so you have HEIF max. So that's up to 48 megapixels. Pro Raw 12 megapixel and Pro Raw max up to 48 megapixels. All right. I wanted to test Pro Raw max up to 48 megapixels just to see if I really wanted to get the most out of this phone, what could I do? Now the file sizes for this Pro Raw Max is up to 75 megabytes, up to 75 megabytes per shot. All right, so what do you get for that 75 megabytes? So here's what I shot, and I'm going to, I'll post these pictures so you can take a look at them. But I shot at 24 millimeters with the main camera, okay, because I wanted to get the most out of this, you know, the most megapixels and all that sort of stuff. And I took these shots and it was in the afternoon, 1:45 in the afternoon. So plenty of light, plenty of everything. The camera set to ISO 100, 24 millimeters, no exposure compensation, f1.78. Okay, f1.8, and this crazy shutter speed of 1/12,000th of a second because it's not closing down the aperture, right? You're just shooting wide open. Okay, those are the settings. And the file size was 8,064 on the long end and 6,048. So 8,000 by 6,000 resolution file weighing in at 82 megabytes. 82 megabytes this bad boy RAW file weighed in at. And why? Because I shot a shot that had a lot of detail. It had a blue sky with clouds, had mountains in the distance, had a foreground valley that we were looking down on that had vineyards, and then there were trees and shrubs and all sorts of different textures in the foreground that the camera had to record all of that. So I took those shots, and they looked fine when I took them on the phone. You know, they looked fine on the LCD. And then I got them home, and this is the part that I wanted to talk about, which is, how editable are those files? How good are those files? What do you get, in this case, for 82 megabytes? Well, one thing that you get is that you get a pretty editable file. In other words, the clouds were a little blown out. They had, you know, white fluffy clouds with, you know, green and blue landscape below. They were a little blown out, and I was able to recover the highlights in the clouds very nicely. They looked terrific. They looked really good. So the highlight recovery, I thought, was quite good. I was able to open up the shadows nicely, very gradually. You know, that nice, you know, when you're editing a good RAW file and you're moving the highlight slider or the shadow slider and it's nice and gradual, that's the way the shadows opened up. So they did really nice. The sharpening looked good. Color was easy to adjust. So they were a very editable RAW file, and they looked nice. When you looked at them for fit-in screen on my high-resolution M1 here, my 14.2-inch Mac, the 14.2 M1, M2 Macs, I think, have some of the finest laptop screens ever made. They are absolutely gorgeous. If I go to full screen and I look at the shot, it's gorgeous. Now, I'm in Photos. If I hit the Z key and I zoom in to 100% and start moving around, things for the most part look good, but this is where you start to see a little bit of the weakness of shooting with a smartphone instead of a regular camera, because you start to see a little bit of smearing. And this is, you know, smearing is something that you won't notice when you're fit in screen, but you will notice when you start zooming in and looking at detail. There wasn't very much, I have to say, and I really, this, you'll see if you look at this test shot, there is a lot of detail in the shot, tons of different textures and stuff. And the smearing's not bad, but there was a little bit here and there. And that's where I started to notice that this RAW file isn't quite as robust. Now, is this a printable RAW file? Can you make a big print? Yes, you can, and it should look very good. Is it a good-looking image that you can zoom in on? Yes, you can. Is it an image that you could crop because you have so much resolution and still look good? Yes, you can. It does all of those things. The only real difference that I have noticed with these RAW files compared to with my cameras that have really good RAW files is that when you zoom in, the detail is still better with my Micro Four Thirds or my APS-C cameras. I still like the colors better with those two cameras. And I feel like that the dynamic range is still better with the cameras than it is with my iPhone Pro Max. Now, this is splitting hairs, but they're important hairs, because if the question at the end of the day for you is, can I just use my iPhone Pro Max instead of bringing a camera? Yes, to a point. I would not bring it on a workshop. I would not bring only that camera to Sedona, for example. I want the best image quality possible, and I'm going to need my good cameras to do that. Would it be good, though, when you're just out bopping around and you see something really beautiful and you shoot RAW and you want to get the most out of the camera? Yes. In that instance, it's going to be very good. So I would say, as a backup camera, these RAW files are pretty good. As my only camera, I'm still not comfortable using them. I still want my regular camera. Now, the way I have my camera set up for most of my shooting is I'm using the HEIF Max, because I figure the camera's already doing a pretty good job. I don't view my iPhone as a RAW camera, and I can still get up to 48 megapixels at HEIF Max. So I'm shooting in that. I switch to RAW every now and then if I just want to get a little bit extra out of it, like I did for this test. I was happy, but I was not surprised at the performance. I'm still looking forward to shooting with my OM system and my Fujifilm cameras in Sedona and using my iPhone Pro Max as an excellent backup camera with crazy good macro, terrific versatility, honestly. So that is my view of how the iPhone 15 Pro Max files stack up to ILC cameras. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to give a shout out to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this podcast month in and month out. They have their own site. They have their own hangout on Derek Story Online. They have their Inner Circle space where they share photos. They ask questions. They chat with each other. I love looking at the photos that these guys and gals post. It's a lot of fun. And they also get discounts on all our workshops. A lot of our workshops are filled with Inner Circle members because it just makes sense. If you go to a physical workshop, you save more than a year's worth of pledges to be in the Inner Circle. It's really fantastic. If you want to join the Inner Circle, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, nose around a bit, and hopefully you will join us for the next workshop season. And finally, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. I want to print some of these RAW files from my iPhone on Red River Paper. I want to do some 13 by 19s and see how they look. And by doing that, then I'll get even a better feel for how this camera performs. And that's the interesting thing. It's one thing to look at these files on my laptop screen or on a iMac screen or whatever I'm using. It's another thing to print them, hang them up on the wall, and then go, how does that look? How does that compare? How do I feel about that? I have iPhone pictures on the wall right now at the studio, and people cannot tell the iPhone shots from my other camera shots. They honestly cannot tell. They like them just as much. They admire them just as much. I have iPhone shots printed on the wall at home, right in there mixed with all my other serious photography. It's crazy. And that's what Red River Paper, they help you get good prints because they have lots of tutorials. They have lots of great paper. You know, they have, you know, information that you need to get the most out of, whether it's your iPhone or your medium format mirrorless camera. You can get the most out of it and make beautiful prints with Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Stop by, take a look and see what they have to offer and print whatever you have going. If it's a great shot, get it on paper and get it on the wall. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I can't wait to get out there with our community out in Sedona, Arizona. I will report back on how it's going. Until then, have a great week. Take some pictures. Stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.